Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Joni Mercer, who is an Alexander Technique teacher in Austin, Texas. She's been a teacher for over 35 years. She is also very interested in yoga and meditation. She studied for many years with a number of teachers whose names I'm not going to try to pronounce, but they may come up in our conversation. She was also one of the first Hatha yoga teachers in Texas. And we're going to talk today about the Alexander technique and how it can enhance spiritual development. Joni, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Robert, and thank you for doing this show, this podcast. It's such a great service to everybody on the planet. Thank
you. Well, thank you, and thank you for being on the show today. Could you begin, Joni, by giving our listeners a very short description or definition of the Alexander technique?
Well, I think the Alexander technique is an intelligent way to solve common movement problems that cause stress and discomfort and even pain. And it's a process where we learn to observe the habits that we develop through our lives that interfere with an innate freedom and flexibility and ease that's everybody's birthright.
Mm-hmm. And how does that, because usually when people think about the Alexander technique, they think in terms of improving posture, improving how you move, reducing pain, performing at a music with a musical instrument or anything you do better. How does that relate to spiritual development?
Wow, Robert, what a great question.
How about an equally great answer?
I'm going to do my best. And spirituality is really about seeing the greatness in each of us on the planet, really seeing that that force or that source or that universal consciousness. Mr. Alexander actually, I think, called it the self. Mm-hmm. I think he was really talking about this universal constant in living that's all pretty knowing, and it's within us. And the Alexander technique gives us a very clear process to begin to watch what our habits are, to watch how we interfere with this innate freedom and flexibility and kindness that's within us. And we learn to inhibit through watching our habits and movement and watching the relationship of our whole head to our whole body, watching how we coordinate ourselves, watching movement patterns. Mm-hmm. We learn to inhibit those qualities that don't serve us. And I think that's very similar to what we learn in spiritual teachings. We learn to inhibit those habits, those continual things that will come up that interfere with us being connected to each other and mm-hmm. being interdependent rather than dependent.
And I think we should pause here for just a moment and talk about that word inhibit. The word inhibit amongst Alexander people does not match at all the Freudian idea of inhibition or repression. It's not about repressing anything. It's really about simply making a decision to stop doing some things or to have an intent to stop doing some things or think.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's no repression in the Alexander technique. No,
in fact, with Alexander technique, we become more free. We become more spontaneous.
Right.
And that spontaneity it's grounded in being present in our bodies.
Right. And just as a historical matter, it's kind of sad for Alexander that Freud came along a little afterwards and took that word, that took the same word that Alexander used. And of course, Freud's probably better known than Alexander at this point. So that word has kind of gotten the meaning a little quite different from what Alexander intended and what you were talking about.
And what I'm talking about really is just stopping, just taking a pause, mm-hmm. and just being aware.
Right. And stopping is a skill.
It really is.
It's not something that you can just wake up one morning and say, well, I'm going to stop all the negative things in my life. You have to do some thinking about how you might stop. And yeah.
You have to do thinking, and you have to really slow down. Mm-hmm. And you really have to begin to watch yourself. And that's a practice. Mm-hmm. And the focus on spirituality is a practice. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that we can do it right away. It just means that we give ourselves permission to create space.
Right. Now, is someone listening to this who perhaps is doing some form of meditation or other spiritual practice might think, well, okay, that's great. The Alexander technique seems to have some overlap with what I'm about, but I'm just fine meditating twice a day. Why would I be interested in this thing called the Alexander technique?
That's another great question, and I'm going to give you a really good answer.
All right.
I've been meditating for over 40 years, and I can tell you that you're not always comfortable. I'm not always comfortable. We're not always comfortable when we just sit. And often we get into aches and pains just sitting. Mm-hmm. And Alexander technique, if we can learn to begin to watch that relationship between our head and our body, between our arms and our torso, between our legs and where our hip joints are, as we're just sitting, then the body doesn't get in the way of being able to focus on awareness.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's particularly true, at least in my experience, of people who do Zen meditation, for example, where they're sitting in a way that's not, that they're not used to.
Exactly.
And assumes perhaps some level of flexibility that may not be there. That it's quite easy to end up with a sore back after doing an hour or two of Zen meditation.
And often when you're meditating, you're not so tuned into what your body's doing from a constructive standpoint. You go, oh my gosh, my hip hurts or my knee hurts. And this is where a teacher can really be helpful and can show you what you're doing with yourself that's interfering with that flow of energy.
So if I could I'll just rephrase my last question. Supposing someone listening is a meditator, and perhaps their form of meditation is sitting in a chair, and they've always been quite comfortable. Maybe they even fall asleep sometimes during meditation. They're that comfortable, and they're getting benefits from it. Again, why, if everything seems fine on a physical level, why would they be interested in the Alexander technique?
Well, you know, meditation isn't really an end in itself. Mm-hmm. And some of the best meditations that we do are walking meditations, mm-hmm. or learning to tune into awareness while we're doing what we're doing, while we're cooking, for instance. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people will tell you, I really don't need to meditate because I'm a surfer, mm-hmm. and that's my meditation. And so I think that we want to think of meditation as being aware of ourselves in every activity. And this really connects into what Alexander technique is all about. It's about that awareness. It's about noticing what your habits are, learning to stop the habits, and to direct yourself consciously to let your neck be free, to let your whole head ease up, to let your whole body follow, to lengthen and to widen. It's really quite simple, the Alexander technique, although maybe not so easy. Mm-hmm. So you may be having great meditations and be very comfortable. And are you that comfortable when you're cooking? Are you that comfortable when you're out for a run?
Or at a party of strangers.
At a party of strangers.
Yeah. One thing it's in my own experience with the technique is that not only do you develop that kind of self-awareness that you're talking about, but as kind of a byproduct, you quite often get very good at observing other people and how they react to situations or how they carry themselves. And that awareness can be a great asset if you want to have a good relationship with them.
Absolutely. One of the things that one of my main Alexander teachers, Marjorie Barstow, taught us is to look at everybody, to look at babies, to look at animals, to watch everybody who is around us and see how they're using themselves. Or another way to define using oneself is watch how the head is being moved in relationship to the rest of the body. And I just recently posted on my Facebook page a picture of a jaguar. And animals move with the head easing away from the body and the body lengthening and widening. When we go to parties, we rarely see people moving with that kind of grace and ease. Or when we go to the grocery store, for instance. So in watching other people, you can really get a gauge on what your environment is and how you can really serve by just being easy in your own self. You really can help to make every situation so much calmer and so much more peaceful. Mm-hmm. And we really need that right now. We really need people who are very aware and very conscious, entering into public situations with that peace and with that space.
Mm-hmm. You know, listening to you talk, I guess a way I would think about what you've just said is that when people talk about spiritual development or spiritual growth, there's often a kind of an assumption that you're going to go directly for some kind of higher power or higher transformation. There'll be blue sparks in the air. You'll be at one with something or other. And in fact, I think most, well, it's true, right?
It
I mean,
is
I
true.
Certainly wanted that when I started meditating. I heard someone had a great experience. I wanted that experience. I didn't really,
exactly.
I wasn't necessarily spending too much time figuring out how I would get it other than just, you know, do the meditation. But I think, in fact, most spiritual teachers are actually many of them are very down to earth guys and gals. I mean, they'll talk about how do you chop vegetables and very mundane things like that.
Well,
and I think maybe a way of expressing how the technique can be, or certainly one way it can be helpful for people on a spiritual path, is not only just that you can sit more comfortably when you meditate, if that's what you're doing, but also that whatever you're doing, you can do it with greater ease and lightness. And that is going to make any sort of higher things, if they're going to come along, easier to integrate in your life, for sure, and probably more likely that you will get those higher things. Does that make sense to you?
It does, and I would like to talk about that a little more pointedly.
Mm-hmm.
I've studied with Swami Muktananda and Guru Mai, Chidvilasananda, and I've spent some time with these beings, these people, and lately I've been studying with a Tibetan meditation teacher, Anam Tupten, and Anam calls these experiences that you alluded to, like blue sparks, he calls them candy. He calls them yeah. spiritual candy.
Yeah.
Because we do have experiences. And those experiences, they guide us to want more. And the more that we're really going to get is the peace, is the contentment, is the space between two thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we practice that space between two thoughts, or the space between us and cutting the carrot, helps us to be centered and grounded. It's not so helpful. We don't want to be in la-la land.
Right.
We want to be present.
Well, I mean, if we are, as I think a lot of people would assume, spiritual selves in a physical body,
yes.
It would be good if we can, at very least, use that physical body as well as we can.
And I think that's what the Alexander Technique helps us to do. It helps
yes.
us to get in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
It helps us to have our feet on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
There's a saying in the Alexander world, you can't have your up if you don't have your down.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And I was just working with a student yesterday, and I was showing her something that Marjorie Barlow taught us about our feet, and helping her to link up how our feet are really grounded on the ground with how our head is connected to the top of the spine, how
right.
the atlas axis and the head really relate to how our feet are grounding us. And
right.
if you're practicing any kind of spirituality, you really have to be in your body. And you know, you were talking about some of the teachers that I've studied with, and one of the things that is a thread that all of these great beings have is that they are grounded. They are fully in their bodies.
Yeah, I actually, an example that I can cite, I do a form of meditation that's kind of TM-ish, but I don't use the TM mantras. I learned a mantra that I learned from this older Swami guy who showed up in Toronto in the early 90s. And I just sort of stumbled onto him and went to a retreat where he was teaching. And his thing was that he didn't speak. He never spoke. You'd ask him a question and he would write it out on a tablet. But his answers were pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so towards the end, I thought, you know, I'm gonna see if he'll give me a mantra. And I asked him, and he said, yeah, I'll come back in 5 minutes and I'll have it for you. And I've been using it ever since. But this guy, every afternoon, without fail, in his flip-flops, would be take part in a very tough and competitive volleyball game. That was his thing. He was very into volleyball, and he was very good at it. And he was probably 80 when I met him, and he was a tough competitor on the court.
Wow.
And I thought, well, that's interesting. That sort of told me, that made me really like him all the more. And it does kind of, I think, tie in with what you're saying about groundedness, and, you know, you don't want to just be sitting in a lotus position 24 hours a day.
Absolutely not. You want to be able to take what you experience in that meditation and take it out into the world, take it into your life. A lot of the teachers that I've studied with, they cook. And it's wonderful to watch somebody like Anam Thubten or Swami Muktananda cut vegetables.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because every slice is purposeful.
Yeah, and actually we could say the same thing about one of our teachers, Marjorie Barstow.
Absolutely.
Who you mentioned, who was extremely mindful 24/7, as far as I could tell.
For me, studying with Marge was definitely being with a Zen master.
Although she herself would never have thought of herself that way, I don't think. I mean, that's just not her way of...
It wasn't her way, and she actually questioned me one time about the spiritual teachers that I went to, and she said, you know, I've never understood this... this thing about the mind and the body and the spirit, because it's all one to me.
Right. And that was kind of one of F.M. Alexander's big insights, certainly the mind-body part. I mean, working in Australia in the late 19th century, was forced to the conclusion that they were two aspects of the same thing. He didn't approach it with that idea, but when he started to investigate himself and how he performed a particular activity, which in his case was speaking, he was forced to that conclusion.
And I think that that's something that is very attractive about the Alexander technique. I know that what drew me to it initially was when I read Mr. Alexander's books, I thought, this is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
This man understands that we're all one,
mm-hmm.
and that wholeness is our birthright.
Yeah, absolutely. Joni, unless you have anything that you want to add, I think this might be a good time to bring our conversation to a close.
Well, Robert, I really appreciate this opportunity that we've had to talk about.
This has been fun.
Yes.
My guest today has been Joni Mercer, an Alexander Technique teacher in Austin, Texas. And if anything that we've been talking about intrigues you and you live in the Austin area, we'll put a link to her website by the interview. You can get hold of her. And if you live anywhere else in the world, we'll put a link to a site with more information about the Alexander technique and that will enable you to find a teacher of the technique anywhere in the world. Joni, thanks so much.
Robert, thank you.